Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. And our apologies to everyone. We would have been on air about, 60 to 90 seconds ago, but old man Minuk couldn't figure out how to use his audio, couldn't figure out how to get his audio to work, despite the fact we've been doing these post-game shows for a number of months now, and despite the fact that literally 12 hours ago, he was still using the same equipment. So, Dave, justify your existence.
No, I'm good. I don't think I need to. I think the reality is that, Drew, I think it's actually your fault because you thought I could read lips. You're yelling at me. You're like yelling. I can't hear. It's not working. And you're like, you're mouthing things to me. I'm like, you realize you could literally type me a message. I was getting a little frustrated, but I'm worked up. I'm ready to go. Let's talk about the Jets game.
The Montreal Canadiens, you didn't show up tonight, Dave.
I was just treating you the same way I would treat my elderly grandparents and trying to help them through their technological difficulties. That, of course, being if they were still around, Ovechkin and to all of my grandparents. But that's a separate issue altogether. The Jets, 5-0 victors tonight over the Montreal Canadiens. And it's amazing that, you probably don't remember, because a lot of people probably don't remember, that it took the Jets 11 minutes to get their first shot on goal during tonight's game in what was a slow start for the Winnipeg-based team. First period, no blood on either side. And then the floodgates opened in that second period after the Paul Stastny opens the scoring, ends up being the game-winning goal. And, as good as the Jets were, and they were, Montreal really made it easy on them. As you said before we were going to get started, that you were going to go off on the Habs performance. So I turn the microphone over to you, my good friend, to share your thoughts about the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, well, that has to be an embarrassing finish to that game, right? Like you mentioned, the Jets were slow in their start. I didn't think the Habs were that great in the first period either, boys. But, I think it starts with kind of just the Canadiens kind of looking like, one of those younger kind of minor hockey league teams that's losing and decides to just kind of, give up and resort to the rough stuff, the chippy stuff, right? And, we saw that with Joel Edmondson, trying to pick a fight with Logan Stanley after Stanley and Josh Anderson were pushing in front of the net. And then we saw Corey Perry ejected and it just kind of fell apart. Right. And, I think a defining moment of that game, guys, and we have to go back to this, is the Nick Ehlers goal. And I realize there's a debate happening, on social media about whether that's a goal or not. And I can see, the argument for that being goaltender interference, but obviously, the NHL came out and, I actually screenshotted it here. It was rule 69.1, basically incidental contact when the goalie is outside of the goal crease, as long as the player makes an effort to, I guess, avoid contact. Anyways, regardless, it's a goal. And, that goal obviously wasn't the determining goal in the game. But, you could also argue that Derek Forbert's goal, which was a nice shot, but Josh Allen's got to have that, guys. And, that goal is a killer, too, because if you're down a couple
Jake of Allen, goals, too.
Well, yeah, sorry, Jake Allen. Sorry, Drew. It's
Josh
been a
Allen's
long day.
The quarterback. Jake Allen's the goaltender.
Yeah, well, I was getting Josh Anderson and Jake Allen confused there. But no, but you know what I mean, guys? Like, Jake Allen's got to have that. And, forward, that's a beauty for him. He's obviously a guy that doesn't score a lot of goals. I think it was his first in 31 games, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But, that goal's a killer, right? Because, and I'm talking about the Ehlers goal. Right. And the Forbort goal doesn't help. But, especially when, you have a chance to maybe come back in the third period, but you're down three goals. You obviously know you're not really scoring a lot on Hellebuck. Right. So that was those two goals were, the TSN turning point for me. And then in the third period, like I said, it was just where was the effort on the Canadiens' behalf? Like, again, you could say that, the game was over after 40 minutes, but come on, like. The effort that the Canadiens put forward in that third period, they can't be happy with that. And give the Jets credit. Like, that goal that they scored on the power play, and what was that, 7 seconds in? Kopp had a fantastic game, right? Like, he really did have a great game. So did Matty Perreault, Adam Lowry. That third line was great. But you know, I think, you know, after that second period, the Montreal Canadiens just decided we're not going to show up in the third period.
You know what, Ezzy, it's interesting because Montreal generally has a tendency to bounce back. That's what, you know, we were told. And to your point, they started off nice, but at the end of the day, they just, you know, look, we've talked about this being a foregone conclusion that the four teams are the four teams. But if I'm Montreal, I'm the one team in that four that is not feeling extremely comfortable, right? Because the Jets are comfortable. Edmonton is going to be comfortable. Toronto's going to be, they're comfortable again after tonight. So you've got these three teams. Those guys are untouchables as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, those are locks. I don't care about the percentages. It doesn't matter at this point. Those ones are locks for me. But Montreal is the only one that is not necessarily, you know, there yet. And one player we talked about today, ironically, and he is Matthew Perreault. And I think Matthew Perreault was just phenomenal tonight. I thought, you know, he doesn't get anything on that Nikolaj Ehlers goal, but he was instrumental, obviously, in taking away the eyes of Allen. And I just thought,
and the glove.
Well, you know what though, and it's funny. My initial reaction was like, how is that goalie interference? Like no. his glove is outside the crease. It's outside the blue paint. You can't stick your glove out as far as you want and say, because again, it's the blue paint. So I don't have a problem with them reviewing it, obviously, because you know they challenged. But I didn't think it was going to be. I mean, again, with the NHL, you never know. Mm-hmm. And I have to, you know, Kelly Rudy has a number more games than I do in the NHL, so. You know, he had a different opinion, but I don't know. Like to me, that one was a no question. And it's crazy, right? He doesn't get an assist on it, but what an instrumental impact he had on that goal, taking away the eyes, and then he gets a goal and an assist himself. So I just think Matthew Perreault is just continued to elevate his game this season. And it's funny because he was talking about it not this series against the Habs, the last time the Jets were in Montreal, and someone asked him about scoring, and he says, well, my friends never want me back home, never want me, because I think he was asked if it's still special to come back and play in Montreal. He goes, yeah, but my friends never want me to score, and they don't want the Jets to have too much success, so it means something even more when I'm able to. So, and he sticks it to them. So I just thought Matthew Perreault had a hell of a game.
Look, yes, he absolutely did, and I agree that should have counted, and I'm glad it did, because what's, you know, if you're a forward and your job is to be a net front presence, and Perreault's job is to be, you know, cause chaos like it is Corey Perry's job in Montreal or anything else, you know, you have to be allotted some space to do your job, and that space is everywhere outside of the blue paint. And he wasn't, you know, infringing on the top of the blue paint. He was clearly in his allotted area. And I'm glad that the NHL and the officials decided that was a good goal, because what else is he supposed to do? You know, what's stopping a goalie at that point in time from coming out to challenge way outside the blue paint and getting, and then throwing his arms up in the air if he gets interfered with?
I don't think it's that obvious though, because, you know, like, you have to, the key here is not the blue paint here, because if the goalie is even, you know, let's say 20 feet out of his net, you can still get called for goalie interference. The point here is that the player has to make the effort. If you read the rule, the player has to make the effort to avoid contact. And I agree with you, Drew, like Perreault's kind of just, you know, doing his screen. So I think the right call was made on the ice, but I think there was a little bit of a gray area there. I really do. But regardless, I mean, the Jets scored four other goals, so it doesn't really matter.
Absolutely. You're right. Because, I mean, that goal, you know.
Well, it's an important goal, though.
Well, it's the second goal of the game. If it's a 1-0 goal at that point in time, you can say that, you know, that was the goal that, you know, it's not the game-winning goal, but you can say that the Montreal Canadiens sort of really sagged even further after that goal, because it's not that much longer after the Ehlers power play goal that Forbort scores his, you know, great shot by Derek Forbort. You know, to your point, as he, you know, Jake Allen, Josh Allen, either of them have to make that save. But, you know, you could say that if the Perreault goal is disallowed and it's back to being a 1-0 game, then it, or sorry, the Ehlers goal, if it's back to being a 1-0 game, then it could be still have been anybody's contest. But I mean, if you want to, you know, point to a turning point, I would say that the officials deciding that should count. And I agree with that. I thought that should have been a good goal, simply because what else is Matthew Perreault supposed to do there? He's coming right across. He's not in the blue paint. I know that's not the deciding factor, or the only deciding factor, but I thought they got that one right. Obviously, the Habs disagreed. The Jets capitalized from that point on, and it was a very clean, very seamless, very, I'm going to almost say effortless which, you know, isn't an insult towards the Jets, but a relatively effortless 5-0 victory for the Jets tonight in Montreal. That's an amazing stat, by the way, at the end of the broadcast. I'm not sure if you guys heard it from John Bartlett, that this is the first time ever in Winnipeg Jets history, 1.0 or 2.0. I'm not sure about the Atlanta Thrashers history, but we'll discount that for the time being. The first time any team playing in Winnipeg ever shut out the Montreal Canadiens in Montreal. That's a fascinating stat for my mind. I mean, we know that, you know, it was a house of horrors for the Jets 1.0, but even a house of horrors, sometimes you fluke into a shutout every now and then.
Yeah, especially with the way Connor Hellebuck has played over the last, you know, 4 or so years, right? So I'm with you, Drew. That is surprising. And also, I think it was mentioned on the broadcast, the Jets never scored 6 goals in Montreal, which is surprising, because it's not like we're talking about, you know, 8 goals or 9 goals or anything like that. But, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, you know, the Jets are clearly in a playoff spot, as are the Canadiens. But, you know, these two games, guys, were much more important for the Canadiens. Now there's basically no chance that the Canadiens are catching any of these three teams. Like, what are the Jets, 10 points ahead of the Canadiens now? Like, it's over. So, I mean, that has to be a very disappointing couple of games here against the Jets. I mean, what have the Jets have beat the Habs, what, 6 times now? Seven times now? Like, I think as that game progressed, you just saw how much better the Jets are than the Canadiens. Now, look, if Brendan Gallagher's in the lineup, Carey Price is healthy, and we can't forget about Ben Chiarot, right, Dave? Like, we talked about Ben Chiarot with Mark Dumont on the Saturday show. Sorry, this morning show. It is Saturday still. you know, like, so they've got some injuries. So if they're healthy, and yeah, the Jets, you could, you know, make the argument they're without a significant player in Wheeler. But without Gallagher, guys, this is just, it's not the same team.
Yeah, and you know, Gallagher's really been a thorn in the side of the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, he's such an effective player. And Mark Dumont, to your point, as he talked about what they're missing in him and what a fine they'll get if, you know, they get him back for the playoffs and he's able to go. I mean, it's almost like a trade you get, because you're getting him and you can clear his cap space if you need to make a move on Monday for Marc Bergevin. But you're right. I mean, look, you don't have Carey Price and you don't have you know, Brendan Gallagher. And so Ben Chiarot, Joel Armia. So you're missing some players. There's no question about it. But at the same time, you're a desperate team. You lost this last game against the Winnipeg Jets. You really can't afford. I mean, look, these are all 4-point games. So, you know, and to answer your question, I think it's 9 now points that the Jets are up on the Habs. Habs have 3 games in hand still. But at the same time, how critical was the series?
It doesn't matter, Dave.
No. I'm with you. I'm with you, Ezzy. Yeah. I 100% agree with you. I think it's a function of, you know, the Jets will just look, if you're the Jets, you've now won the first 2 games of this road trip. You have a pair against Ottawa and then one against Toronto. And if you're Paul Maurice, how good do you feel right now knowing that your whole plan, this road trip, I don't want to say it was a throwaway road trip, because obviously A, he would never say that. And B, no NHL coach is really going to say that. But he, to that point, he talked about tinkering, and it was all about like playing with things. And, you know, it's interesting. Murat, which is on the post-game availability, and talked about what Matthew Perreault said in it. And he said that they watched a video on Thursday, he and Andrew Copp, to know where he was supposed to be, where he was supposed to put that pass to Copp on that fourth goal. So it's interesting what they were able to learn, you know,
on the power play goal you're talking about.
On the power play goal. And so the point is, though, that it just goes to show you that the Jets were able to make the right adjustments and the Habs didn't.
Yeah, and we saw that almost a carbon copy of that goal. I'm just going to say, Drew, remember when Paul Stastny was in that spot and Blake Wheeler fed him the puck? And that's a play like the Jets' power play. I think, you know, we're not going to get into, you know, break it down here, but, you know, the Jets' power play this year, obviously there's different players out there, right? Like Pierre-Luc Dubois wasn't out there last year. Paul Stastny wasn't there last year, but the way that they've managed to do that play, that kind of tic-tac-toe, whoever happens to be in that spot, like Matty Perreault was there, but it's been Blake Wheeler, you know, oftentimes.
In the below the goal line spot.
Exactly. In that below the goal line spot. Yeah. And it seems like a very, you know, basic play, but it's very hard to execute, but it's bang, 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 as Dennis Bayak likes to say, right? And we've seen that. And, you know, so
you just have to be quicker than your opponent. I mean, it's not, there's nothing fancy about it. And you know, every team knows what the Jets want to do with that. But it's just a matter of if the Jets can it's the execution of it. It's the Jets executing it on the offensive side better than the other team, than the defending team executing it on the defensive side. And they executed it perfectly. I mean, you can't draw up a power play any better than the one that Andrew Kopp scored. You win the faceoff, you get the puck low, you get it right back out in front to Kopp.
Yep.
7 seconds. I mean, you can't do anything in life in 7 seconds. The Jets can apparently score a power play goal, but that's just, I think, speaks to how good the Jets were, and when they're on and when they're executing, that's you see it at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we didn't even really talk about the penalty kill. Like, when, how many power plays did the Habs have tonight? Three, four? Yeah, I guess I could go to NHL.com and check, but. It didn't look like a very dangerous power play. Like, I thought the Canadians were having trouble with their zone entries. Like, we know, Gallagher is a guy that can help out there. But I just thought that, any time that the Canadians had a chance to get back in this game, they didn't use it. Right. And it was just one of those games where, Montreal had some opportunities in the first period. You remember Jonathan Drouin had that great opportunity, in front of Connor Hellebuyck, and he just, didn't get it up and over him. But throughout the game, like, there just weren't that many, what we call high danger chances. We talked about it, guys, like, this is the second game in a row against Montreal where you scored three goals in one period on Allen. Right. And it's like, kind of the games were determined basically in those two periods. If you think about it, yes, a couple nights ago, Montreal made a push, but tonight it was just, they didn't have time. They, it was, after time Andrew Kopp's goal, the game was over.
Yeah, time or will. I mean, there was no, you think, okay, bad second period for the Montreal Canadiens. You're down 3-0. Most times you expect a push from the team that's down to start the next period. Well, there was no push.
Let's put it this way. I was writing my game recap at that point. It seemed like a foregone conclusion.
That's probably what's most disheartening for Dominic Ducharme, the Habs coaching staff, Habs management, and of course Habs fans, is that there was no pushback. And the lack of a pushback, and I know you don't have Carey Price, and I know you don't have Brendan Gallagher, and Gallagher is your heart and soul, a player of your team, and he's the guy who's going to ensure that your team has that pushback. But, Shea Weber is no slouch when it comes to being the captain of a hockey team. And what did he do in tonight's game? His contribution was a great pass to Matthew Perreault, and that, and that's a gaffe. Oh, and that's a, and
just,
that's
a, just and that's, brutal, I mean, just absolutely. Yeah. And well, and in the first goal,
emblematic of the game.
No, absolutely, Drew. And look at the Senators, right? Like, the Senators go down 2-0 to the Leafs. They claw back. They take the 3-2 lead, right? Like, the Senators have absolutely nothing to play for. Like, they are, what are they back, 20 points behind the Jets right now? I'd have to check. But, like, the Senators have been out of it basically since.
They're 23 points behind the Winnipeg Jets right now.
Awesome. Just unbelievable. But you know what I mean? Like, the Senators, we've seen that against the Jets as well. Like, they fight and they claw and they, they play to the final whistle. Like, the Canadians look like they were, ready to go hit Crescent Street after the second period.
Maybe they knew what Mark, maybe they were listening. Maybe they were listening to the show today and heard all the poutine talk from Marc Dumont.
That's right. Except for the fact that there's that curfew in Montreal, in Quebec right now. I'm sure they would be, they'd be at the club, but not tonight. They won't be. Interesting comment from Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah.
Our buddy Mike McIntyre tweeting about this. So Hellebuyck, gave Corey Perry a pretty good slash. Corey Perry, of course, got a 10-minute misconduct and was gone for the rest of the game. Here's the quote from Connor Hellebuyck about Corey Perry. Quote, he's a pretty dirty player. He's constantly putting his stick in my face, so I had enough. You know what? Connor Hellebuyck, you post a shutout, you're, if not the best goaltender in the NHL, then certainly in the top two goaltenders of the NHL, you can own that crease in front of you, and you can tell Corey Perry where he needs to go with his extracurricular activities. And that's the swagger that I think you're getting to see from this Winnipeg Jets team, and that's the swagger you're seeing from Connor Hellebuyck, who's now, 7-1-1 in his last 9 games with a goals against average that's about a goal and a half, something like that, some incredible number. So, this Jets team playing with full confidence, and you can see it seeping through all aspects of the organization and all aspects of the players.
Yeah, and just saw a comment, Joe from Winnipeg saying, like, especially considering Wheeler's out of the lineup and the Jets still beat the Habs, you can clearly see the Jets are a deeper team, and I agree, right? Like, the Habs are a good team as well, but right now, they're just not playing as a team, and I thought it looked like a really disorganized group. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but at times it just, it looked like there were a lot of broken plays, just like not a lot of sustained pressure. Like it was a bit of a weird game. And, you know, Drew talked about this on this morning's show. You know, when you know that you're going to be a playoff team and you like, and this applies to Montreal as much as it does to the Jets, the Oilers, and the Leafs, because now we know the Habs are locked into fourth, mm-hmm. right? And the Jets and Oilers, it's going to be very tough for them to catch the Leafs. So it's almost like it's going to be hard for both the Leafs and the Canadians, and for that matter, the Jets and the Oilers, to have a lot to play for. But, you know, as far as Hellebuck's comments go, like, yeah, Corey Perry is a guy, you know, that likes the chippy stuff. And I think it, you know, irks the players more, guys, when the games are over. You know what I mean, Dave? Mm-hmm. Like, we've watched enough hockey over the years to know when a team's down 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, whatever. And then you start resorting to the chippy stuff. Like the Josh Morrissey, Jake Evans fight. Like, what is Jake Evans like? Evans was the one that kind of initiated that, right? Like, and it wasn't much of a fight, but like, what's the point? What was the point of that? You know, like there was absolutely no, like, it didn't even come after, like, it wasn't even like there was a big hit or there was nothing to that.
Yeah.
And to me, the Habs are just a frustrated team. Like they were just losing to a better team. And let's not forget, guys, you know, the Jets lost 7-1 to the Habs earlier this year in that building. And you got to think that was in the back of their minds too.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, that was funny because that was the first Morrissey fight in the NHL, if you want to call it a fight. Sandy was asking earlier in the comments, would that be considered a fight?
That was more of a double rough.
Yeah, I mean, although it was funny because I was like, when was it? And then Hockey Fights, of course, had it. And he fought Anthony Mantha. I probably watched that game or was at that game when they were
January 5th, 2016.
Yeah. Yeah, when he was with the Moose.
Oh, no, Drew, you didn't even look at Hockey Fights for that. You just knew that.
Yeah, Drew was at the game too. But no, I mean, look, and yeah, you know, the other player who endeared himself, I think, again to his teammates was number 64. I think Logan Stanley is continuing to do that. I mean, we talked about adding that physical element, standing up for his teammates. People might not like fighting, you know, and that's your choice, that's your prerogative. But there's still a physical element in hockey, and a guy like Logan Stanley standing up for his teammates like that, and look. I mean, personally, I like Logan Stanley, but if he goes up against Joel Edmondson, I suspect he would get tuned. I could be wrong, but the Manitoba boy is a big kid. So I'm not so sure Edmondson is one that you're really going to want to take on if you're Logan Stanley. But again, that just earns you greater respect from your teammates when you're a guy who's willing to use one of your physical attributes to help out the guys on this team and to provide something that, again, we talked about it previously. People who don't watch this Jets team reference them as a big, heavy hockey team, but that's not what they are anymore. And so they've got some Lowry, Blake Wheeler's a big boy, but they really don't have the big, heavy players anymore without the, you know, the Bufflins, the Sherratts, Trubas. So again, when you have a player like Logan Stanley, even though he's young, he's doing a lot to endear himself to his teammates when he does that sort of thing. And he stands in and, you know, I mean, and I'm sure they're probably sharing a laugh with him laughing off Weber and that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see how that rolls with the team, but I suspect that can only further endear him with them.
Yeah. And you know, Stanley had, you know, a relatively quiet game, guys, which, you know, oftentimes is a good thing. And to me, like it was Anderson, like we talked about it earlier, it was Anderson that was really going at Stanley and just getting mm-hmm. frustrated. And it's because, you know, Stanley's a big man and he was shutting down the Canadians all night long. Right. So that again, it just kind of goes back to what I was talking about. Like the Habs just look like a frustrated team, an immature team taking penalties. You know, Perry takes the misconduct. They just didn't have it tonight and they didn't have really anything going. And, you know, we kind of saw that with, you know, what happened towards the end of that game.
I would agree exactly with what you guys said there. Let's hear from Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. He's addressing the media in Montreal after tonight's contest.
Given some of the challenges Montreal has provided for your group, what does it mean to post a shutout against them in what was a pretty tidy effort after the first several minutes?
Yeah, I think the best part of the game was us that we improved from our first game in here. That, you know, we had given up a fair amount off the rush, and we were much, much better at it. And I also we got stronger with it as the game went on. The areas that we thought needed to improve from game one, we did.
We'll go next to Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Sean.
Thanks, Gregor. Paul, you talked earlier or at times throughout the season about generating offense the right way. Is that game the perfect example of your team generating offense the right way?
I think we didn't do it from behind. We didn't do it to, on one-off plays. I mean, they had some turnovers, obviously, that they would like back. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that we weren't trying it. Was there. Some pretty good chances that didn't go in for us as well. But the lines were right. I think we forced plays offensively that caused us, which is part of the rush chances that we gave up last game. We seemed to be forcing some plays that we didn't need to. We just played a pretty, you know what, I thought we played a pretty hard and pretty smart game here tonight.
Go next to Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press. Go ahead, Mike.
Paul, it was like deja vu the first and the second period. You start the Lowry line, they go out, really strong shift, draw a penalty in the first, and then they do it again in the second. I know that doesn't show on the score sheet, but just to start periods the right way with that line like that, what is it? Does it set the tone, I guess, for the rest of the period?
Right on. With a style of game that we're trying to get to a little bit more, which is closer to a playoff style of game, they get out, they get on the body a little bit, not running around. Simple plays, and they, you know, it just gets your bench restart. The style of play for all our lines is going to be slightly different, but there's a theme to what we're trying to do, and those guys have it dialed in. Matty Perreault's been really good on that line on the left side and added a little creativity, I think, to that group in the right way, in the right spots on the ice. So they've been good. They've been a good place for us to lead.
Next to Scott Billick from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, Paul. Connor Hellebuck kind of does in a goal in the last game, comes back, posts a shutout. I mean, we've asked you to kind of say nice things about him quite a bit over the last few years, but what do you say about his 20th win again tonight?
Well, we made some saves. You know, earlier in the game, I think they had more action than later. And then he saw you get to a point in the game when he looks that way, you think there's, I don't think they're going to beat him. I have to make a pretty egregious mistake here for him to do everything. And he sees some experience, right? Just years now that he's played in the NHL, he's picked the times to play the puck, picked the times not to, moved it well when he needed to. His rebound control was really, really good tonight, right? And then he's just, you know, he's world class. So when he gets in that, and it's getting excited for him, appreciate what he does for us. You get into that third period, nobody wants to be the guy that costs Sally a shutout. They mean much to us, so they're all worst shots. And the effect that the players have for their goalie and everything he does for them.
We'll go next to Carter. Go ahead, Carter.
Hi, Coach. Just moments ago, Connor Hellebuck told us that he felt that the result of the challenge was appropriate. However, if the play had occurred outside of the crease, or if the play that had occurred outside the crease, inside the crease, it probably wouldn't have been the result. What right. were your thoughts on the challenge, and what was the reaction or explanation there?
There was my interpretation, because of where Matty Perreault skated, and the goaltender hadn't established original position and got skated through, I wasn't particularly concerned about the outcome of that until it took once it did, right? So I'm feeling pretty good in the first 35, 40 seconds of that. And then as it gets longer and longer, you start to want to interpret differently than you do. Had it been a paint for sure, but once something gets outside the paint, even if a goalie's, you know, he's got forward position with his hands, he doesn't have the right to that ice any more than a player does.
And final question to Ken Weaver from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Weaver.
I'll talk a lot about the, you know, evolution of Andrew Copp, but what's it meant to see him become one of your top power play producers as well this year?
Boy, that unit might have gone on four with the substantial argument tomorrow and the next day about which unit is in fact the first unit. It's a really good example. You know, when those guys got together, they want to make it work, and they like working together. So when Blake went down, you know, I think their biggest fear is that that unit would get aged. We pull Nikolai Ehlers off, we pull Andrew Kopp off, because they're talking about it all the time on the bench, you know, and they're excited to go out there, and they get to go out almost with slightly less pressure than the first unit has. They've been good, right? And they, you know, it's a real good spot for Andrew. He's such a smart player. He finds a way to just position himself in just the right spot. So I'm happy for a guy that we asked to do a really heavy defensive job that has some offense, that he gets a chance, a place in the lineup where he can show what he can do offensively.
Thanks very much, Coach.
Okay,
Saturday night, okay, as he's drinking, so you know that it, well, I'd say it, you know it's a Saturday night, but that would basically...
Oops, sorry, I didn't realize we were back there, boys.
All together. That's okay, you're more than entitled to have a beer at this hour. We've been on, we did the morning show, you know, for a couple, about 12 hours ago, not 12 hours ago, we started about 12 hours ago, so you're more than entitled to have a beer. I don't think anybody's going to be too upset seeing you drink. Actually, well, drink a Corona. Don't you have any taste when it comes to beer?
What's wrong with Corona? Corona's a great beer.
It's, you know, support local first and foremost would be my comment about your beer choices.
I do support
second
local.
Second of all, for a guy who...
I drink a lot of half pints, a lot of Torque. Well, I can have other beers.
Well, those are... Oh, you can, but I'm saying, Corona's like nothing to write home about.
That's okay. I mean, you know, we all have our own poisons.
Very true. I want to make an interesting symmetry. We got this tweet from Richard Lee, sent it to us on Twitter. Tonight, going back April 10th, 2011. You guys know what April 10th, 2011 was?
I'm going to guess it was the last time the Thrashers ever played at Phillips Arena.
I'm going to guess that you were right because you saw our Twitter feed as much as I did. So yes, that would be what? 10 years ago tonight was the final Atlanta Thrashers game in Atlanta. So, you know, a little bit of interesting, I don't know if it's poetry or if it's numerology or if it's...
Why? I don't get it though.
Why? What about it? Well, it's just interesting.
Oh, it's interesting, but I don't think there's any symmetry there.
No, there might not be any symmetry, but I was struggling for words and you clearly weren't helping me because, you know, nobody can read what's on the whiteboard behind you. So you got to deal with that first.
I think that's almost...
Struggling, Ezzy drinking, and your illegible scrawl behind you. It's a hell of an operation we got going on here.
I think the illegible scrawl is becoming more kitschy.
Yeah, except for, I mean, the people who are in the chat who know about the illegible scrawl are enjoying
it. I wrote it. It's illegalcurve.com.
Yeah. Okay.
No. I meant I wrote it in the chat.
You wrote it in the chat. You're not doing anything about changing the board though, are you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, good to see everybody that's still with us. And they,
listen to Chris in Winnipeg though. Listen to Chris in Winnipeg.
That's what I was going to say.
There's so many of you who need to listen to Chris in Winnipeg.
And I'll put the tweet the comment right there on the screen. If you're watching this and haven't smashed the like button, then you are a pigeon.
Not a boy, Chris.
I assume that being a pigeon is a negative thing.
Well, it's...
You've never heard that yet?
Seriously, you don't
know what a pigeon is?
I mean,
because you're a pigeon, Drew. That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be. You know, maybe I am a pigeon. You know, maybe that's the problem. But whatever it is.
Just kidding.
Oh, by the way, well, especially considering we had what was J-Bell's bird name again?
Marty Bird.
By the way, I'm with C-Mac, Belgian Moon. Good beer.
Yes, Belgian Moon is a... We had Belgian Moon during, like, when we were in Kentucky for your wedding. I remember drinking a lot of Belgian Moon.
Okay, well, now anytime you mention my wedding, you have to bring up Ezzy. How many events were there for my wedding?
First off, it was a beautiful wedding.
Thank you. Nice.
And it was great to visit Kentucky. I would say there were probably four or five.
Right. And how many shirts? How many shirts did you bring?
Dress shirts. You're talking about.
Dress
I had shirt. Other shirts.
Dress
shirt. I only brought one dress shirt.
And what did you spill on the dress shirt?
I think it was butter from something.
It was melted butter from
a nice piece of meat that I was eating. And I got the melted butter all over the shirt, and I didn't have a shirt for the wedding.
Well, and this was the first night of the wedding. The first
event. Night one.
And then where did you go to buy a shirt?
Well, the fine folks at Joseph A. Bank supplied me with a nice little, you know, dress shirt. I think I might have bought a couple of dress shirts, but regardless, You know, I had to put a slap a little money on the credit card to pick up a couple dress shirts.
And any day now, you're going to be paying off that credit card, despite the fact my wedding was 9 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. That 17% interest can really hurt you, boys. So just make sure you pay off those credit cards. But I have no idea where we were going with this. So I think I'm just going to take another sip.
Guys, by the way, Patrick Liney's in the chat and he says, what's it like without me in Winnipeg?
Let's talk about the trades. Thank you, Patrick. That's a good segue, to talking about the trades that happened. The David Savard trade, that was the one that everybody here in Winnipeg was keeping an eye on. We know now that he's gone to the Tampa Bay Lightning, sort of via the Detroit Red Wings. With
very NBA, very basketball-esque.
A lot of salary cap manipulations going on there, salary cap ramifications, I say, that allow the Lightning to take the Savard. To take David Savard as a player, but basically barely pay him anything to speak of.
By the way, does Steve Yzerman still qualify as a GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning? Because he's certainly doing them quite the nice little solid on that one.
Wow. He's got
cap space, and he gets a fourth round pick for simply using a little bit of his cap space.
He was basically like the Red Wings in this transaction were basically like an offshore bank account. You know what I mean?
You're not far off. So. With Savard, obviously, so it cost Tampa a first, a third, and a fourth in total
to get
David Savard. Pretty hefty price, no question. Now, what does that do for the Winnipeg Jets between now and Monday? I guess
it's a good question. Sort
of a two-part question. One, are we going to be having a special edition of a show discussing a trade tomorrow, or do you think that it's going to be until Monday now and the actual trade deadline day before there's any news from the Jets perspective?
If you guys want to fire one up, we'll fire one up. But I think it means that, someone like Josh Manson becomes more of a target, right? And we don't know if there's the no movement clause factors in. Obviously, what I mean is we don't know if Manson will waive that. But it changes a lot because, David Savard was that number one target for the Jets. It's pretty obvious that, Chevy was in on him. And we talked about it, right, Dave? Like, it was most likely going to have to be a first round pick. We know Tampa Bay, going back to last year, isn't afraid to trade those first round picks. But, you wonder, does a guy like Jamie Oleksiak become, a more of a target for Chevy, or Alex Goligoski? Like, there aren't too many, it's like one player after another is kind of coming off of that list, right? Like Brandon Montour, he comes off of the list, right?
He goes to Florida.
It's not like Chevy has, 12 different defensemen to choose from. Like, we're talking about, some of the players we just talked about, Manson, Goligoski, Oleksiak, maybe Mike Riley from the Ottawa Senators. But going back to what you said before, Drew, I wouldn't be surprised if, that acquisition comes tomorrow ahead of the trade deadline on Monday.
Well, you can sort of see, Dave, things ramping up a little bit. I mean, Savard. Really, what I take from the Savard trade is Jarmo Kekalainen was waiting until somebody came to the table with that first round pick.
Yep.
And the first guy to come with that first round pick was going to get David Savard. And obviously, Tampa, this isn't news. They are more than, they're in a win now mode, and they can see themselves repeating as Stanley Cup champions. And heaven help that person who decides to bet against them, because there's no reason to think that they can't win the cup, especially now that they acquired David Savard. But to me, it looks like Chevy just wasn't prepared to pay that price. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. A first and a third, and as it turns out, I don't think the Jets would have had to pay the fourth, because they could manipulate the salary cap a little bit better than Tampa Bay could have. But I don't think that the first and the third was a price that Kevin Cheveldayoff was willing to pay for David Savard.
Yeah, and again, like I said, it's a hard. First of all, how nice is it that we get to talk about this? Normally, we would be done a Saturday show, and we wouldn't be talking about it till next Saturday. So it's nice that we get to keep talking about things that happened throughout the course of the day on a trade deadline or ahead of trade deadline day. And Drew, it's a tough call. Like, to me, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, what is your thought process for this season? Are you going to be able to challenge? Is that first and third? Look, it's a high price to pay. And again, I know people are saying, would you have gone for a lighter option, like an Oleksiak or a Riley? But again, what do you want to do with this group? And to me, would Savard have solidified the top pairing? Like, if Josh Morrissey and David Savard, And Murat wrote about it in his article that Ezzy referenced yesterday on Twitter. And I thought one of the points he made was putting guys down in the lineup. You know what I mean? Again, Tucker Poolman is playing an elevated role, a role I don't know that he's suited for. So I think what you're doing is you're giving these players an opportunity to kind of be, even if it means breaking up Derek Forbert, Neil Pionk, and having, even though he's a sniper now, Derek Forbert playing, you know, in that third pairing left side role. And you know, again, it's one of those things. Like, if you can do that, if you can make those moves to make your team better, you do it. And again, we don't know. We talked about it today on the Saturday show. We don't know what the draft is going to look like. So there's a lot of chaos involved there. And to me, I get it. And again, like I said, I'm a big proponent of stocking the cupboard and making sure your farm club has young prospects to play. And the Jets need forward prospects. There's no question about it, right? Like, they've got a handful. You've got Perfetti, who had an assist on the game-winning goal today. The Moose won 3-2 in overtime. They beat the Belleville Senators. And so you've got Perfetti, you've got Gustafsson, you've got Vesalainen. Really, those are your three forward prospects. And then you've got Nathan Smith in college. But you don't have a tremendous number of forward prospects.
So is Vesalainen to you, Dave, on the untouchables list? Or, you know, if the untouchables list is Heinola and Perfetti and Gustafsson and maybe even Samberg, do you put Vesalainen up with that group? Or do you think that if the deal was a good one, that Cheveldayoff would include Vesalainen at this point in his development?
Well, I mean, I think it becomes a function of, okay, so there's a couple of thought processes that he has to go through, right? For the first part, Christian Vesalainen is going to be ideally he's going to want to be a scoring winger.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you put him as a scoring winger if you've got this group? Like, do you see him? Like, could he potentially be there? He's a big boy. He's got a good shot. He can skate. You know, he's got some flaws in his game, but his game's improved a lot this year from what it was last year. So to me, are you going to, you know, find a spot for him in that lineup? Is he going to be in your top nine? Because if you don't think he's there, then he becomes a trade chip. And then he becomes something that is, you know, to me, David Gustafsson is a different player. He's more valuable in the sense that he's a center, and especially because you don't know what's going to happen with Adam Lowry. He eventually could be, or, you know, again, you put him as your fourth line center and you go Scheifele, Dubois, Lowry, and Gustafsson. And that's going to be a tremendously deep center group, because David Gustafsson, in my mind, and I watch him a lot, I think I'm probably a little bit biased at this point. I think he's got a tremendous upside at the NHL level eventually. Not yet, but I think eventually he'll have it. So, you know, Gustafsson, I think, is an untouchable. I think Heinola is an untouchable. I think Samberg is close to that level, and Perfetti. And I think, you know, there's other guys that they're projects, you know, like Chisholms and Kovacevics and Gavankes. But again, and a Vesalainen, and I think if you don't see him in that spot next year, Then you think, and again, you're always going to need to refill the cupboard. You know, you could have injuries. You could have a guy like Blake Wheeler go down. You could have other forwards go down. You need a skilled guy who can go and, you know, fill that role, because you can't just throw a plugger in there. You need a guy who has that sort of level of talent.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. And if you're going to be trading Vesalainen, right, like, you can say whatever you want about him. It's a first-round pick. So we know that, you know, Chevy doesn't like to trade his first-round picks, whether it's a player that's already drafted or an actual pick, right? So you better be getting a pretty significant piece back if he's part of a package, right? Because I don't think any of us, you know, expect him to be traded for one for one at this point, right? So any of those defensemen that we've been talking about, like whether it's Manson, whether it's Oleksiak, Nikita Zadorov is a guy that I see a lot of people talking about in the chat there. And he's got 1 year left on his contract. And it's an interesting one because he's 1 year away from RFA status. And so that puts you in a different situation than what you're talking about with a David Savard, for example, right? So, like, again, I don't think the Jets would be willing to give up a first-round pick for Nikita Zadorov. Like, he's also a big defenseman. We've seen him a lot in the Central Division, right, with the Avalanche. So, I mean, he can play both sides as well. So, you know, it's possible that the Jets are, you know, maybe considering Zadorov. You know, I mean, the Hawks are obviously a team that, you know, still wants to be a playoff team, but they're obviously also up against the salary cap. So, but regardless of any of these defensemen we're talking about, Dave, like, Christian Vesalainen, I don't see being part of that package. And, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, Dylan Samberg is untouchable. I don't think David Gustafsson is, like when you say untouchable, first off, that's subjective. And I, like for me, it's the top prospects, and Gustafson is one of the top prospects, but he's not in that same category. Like Cole Perfetti, Ville Heinola, first round picks. Like these guys are going to have, you know, probably, you know, all-star type careers. And I agree with you, Dave. Like you've watched him, as you say, much more than I have. Gustafson is, you know, as you've said, he's ready for the NHL now, but obviously there's a long-term plan for him to play with the Moose now and then, you know, make that, you know, graduate to the big club next year. So I don't see Gustafson being traded, but I don't think, you know, Chevy is necessarily, you know, willing to dangle prospects at this point. I think it's more a draft pick. So is it going to be a second round pick and a fourth round pick to acquire one of these defensemen? When you're talking about a guy like Oleksiak, I really don't think you're going to have to, you know, throw in a first round pick. You're not going to have to part with that. So I think you're talking about mid round picks.
The defenseman that was going to cost you the most, at least, you know, the pending UFA defenseman that was going to cost you the most was David Savard. Now you know that's not a non-starter. If Josh Manson comes available, and if he's willing to waive his no move, and I know that's, you know, the big asterisk involved with everything, he's going to cost you a pretty significant return.
Could be a first rounder.
It could be a first. It could be first and Vesalainen. That's why I mentioned sort of Vesalainen as, you know, the best. He is, I think, the Jets' top pro. I'm going to rank him higher than Nyku in terms of appeal to another team.
See, and but I think, sorry, I was just going to say, see, for me, a first rounder and Vesalainen is giving up too much. I like Manson.
Giving up too much for a guy like Josh Manson?
Unless you're getting something else in that trade. Like, if that's the trade, I don't like that trade for the Jets. That's just me.
And that's fair. I mean, I'm just saying that I think that maybe focus less on the first round aspect, but I think if you're going to get Josh Manson out of Anaheim, and that's certainly been talked about, it's going to cost you a draft pick, first or second, maybe a conditional second that turns into a first, and that prospect. And I think the prospect the Jets would be most willing to trade is Christian Vesalainen. That, to me, is the one that makes, you know, sort of the most sense. That being said, when the Jets acquired Paul Stastny, remember, they traded a first, and the prospect then was, if I'm not mistaken, Eric Foley. Now, Eric Foley's career has obviously been derailed due to concussions, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not 100% sure where he's playing, if he's playing at all anymore. And that's terribly unfortunate. And obviously, you know, we wish that wasn't the case. But you know, prospects, you know, that's sort of the unknown about prospects is, and injuries in general. You never know what's going to come around the corner, and that's why, you know, if the price for Manson, if he's willing to waive and there's a deal to be made, and Bob Murray in Anaheim says it's going to cost you a second, conditional second, and Vesalainen, boy, I think Cheveldayoff's got to think long and hard about
still
that.
Still
too much, is he? Really? Why? Then what are you willing to trade for a top four defenseman?
Well, first, yeah, and I mean, Manson is a top four defenseman, but, you know, that's such a general, like, you know, he could be a top pairing defenseman, but here's the thing. I think Christian Vesalainen is still a very young prospect, and I think his ceiling is very high. Like, we just went through this with Logan Stanley, right? We were already, you know, writing Stanley off. We weren't, I don't mean. I think people were writing him off in terms of his future. And then lo and behold, here he is, you know, playing really well in the Jets' third pair. I agree with Dave. Like, right now, I don't see, like, a fit for Vesalainen in the Jets' top nine or top 12 for that matter. All I'm saying is, like, your trade, Josh Manson's not a young player. Manson's 29 years old, and he's got a year left on his contract. So all I'm saying is, like,
that's why it's going to cost you more
to get Manson. Sorry.
Yeah, that's why it's going to cost
you more. No, what I'm saying is Vesalainen is 21 years old, and he still has a bright future ahead of him. So that's giving up a lot. Like, that's why I'm saying giving up, throwing in Vesalainen, and even if it's a, like, if you're talking about Vesalainen and a third-round pick, then, you know, maybe we have something there. But when you say conditional second-round pick or first-round pick, again, that's just my opinion, but I think you're giving up a lot there. And you do have to give up, like, this is a seller's market, guys, right? It's a seller's market. There's no doubt about that. And like, you know, Manson is a good defenseman. There's no doubt, Drew, he's a top four defenseman. So I just want to make that clear, because on this morning show, we talked about it. I like Manson. All I'm saying is, I think you got to be careful when you throw in, you know, Vesalainen. Like, that's not just a C prospect. He's a really good player.
Yeah, and look, to Ezzie's point, and I think one of the things he's trying to get to, because he's right, is Christian Vesalainen has elevated his game this year. Paul Maurice has talked about it. He's much improved from what you saw last year. He's got a good attitude. His game was different. Pascal Vincent has talked about it. There's still things, again, that he needs to work on. But at the same time, he's had a good attitude in the AHL. He looked good playing with Cole Perfetti, especially on the power play. So, again, you don't just – and that's why I tend to be a little more risk-averse in terms of giving up on prospects, because to Ezzie's point, look at Logan Stanley, right? Everybody was calling him a bust for so long, mostly people who had never watched him play, that is. But a lot of people were already saying this guy was done, terrible pick. And again, now – like I said to you guys, like, we're talking about a guy that people were apoplectic that he wasn't in the lineup, and none of us ever anticipated that. So, and so to me, I'm not going to put Christian Vesalainen in that same category. I would agree with Ezzie. Like, you know, at the same time, I would agree with Ezzie, but I would also say you have to kind of think to yourself, what is it that you're looking to do with this group? Do you think you can challenge? Do you think you can go into Toronto and beat Toronto in a 7-game series? Do you think you can do it with this group? Do you think you could do? Yeah, and that's what I mean. And so if you do, then you're right, Ezzie. You tinker. You don't make major gambles on your future, because you know, look, you're going to need to replace some of these guys. You know,
I think the Jets can beat any team right now in the North. Like, obviously, we're talking about three teams. They can clearly beat the Canadians. They can absolutely beat the Oilers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been proven to that they can beat the Leafs as well, even though, you know, the Leafs have badly outshot the Jets in those wins. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dave, I agree with you. Like, I think if the Jets don't end up doing anything, which I think we all agree that's not most likely going to happen, we expect the Jets to acquire at least one defenseman. Just look at the way this team's playing right now. Like, and we know that, you know, Blake Wheeler is going to come back eventually. We know that there always is the chance you can insert a Ville Heinola into the lineup, right? So that's kind of the ace in the hole there. But you're absolutely right. If you think, you know, that's an area that you need to address, clearly Chevy knows that's the area you have to address. We're talking about defense. Then he's going to make the move. But Drew, I'll eat crow. If that trade happens, hey, first off, I like to eat. But
have you ever had crow?
I have not had crow.
Really? I'm surprised.
I've watched the movie The Crow, though.
Oh, I wouldn't think there'd
with,
be
many. With Brandon Lee, who died after that movie was made.
Yeah, I wouldn't think there'd be many birds you haven't consumed at this point in time.
No, I've had, you know, some other birds.
Well, speaking of pigeon, have you had pigeon before?
Never had.
Never had pigeon?
Pigeons creep me out. They're disgusting.
Have you ever had, what was J-Bell's bird again? What kind of bird? Not Marty, but what kind of bird is it? A conure?
It was a Kyle Conure.
Ezzie, have you ever had a Conure?
A Kyle Conure. This is the. I'll tell you
Hold
what.
Hold on that note.
Yeah, this has been quite the day. I got to tell you guys, we have our first ever guest appearing with a bird on his shoulder. Uh oh, now we got to tell another story. Sorry, got to interrupt here.
Oh boy.
Coffee and TV has asked a great question.
Well, no, Ezzie doesn't know about hot food at 7-Eleven, but he knows about cold fruit.
That's right. So once upon a time, and this is one of my favorite moments in Illegal Curve history, and we have the audio. I'll get it for maybe for Monday's post game show.
Yeah, I think Remus has that.
I have it. Don't worry about it. We don't need Remus. Once upon a time, Ezzie, this is before he was married and before he was responsible for bringing two children into this world.
Ezzie decided I was very single and very dangerous.
Ezzie decided that he needed to start eating healthier. That's a very admirable goal to have. That's a very admirable life change to have. By the way, if you're listening to the story, you should be smashing the like button and hitting the subscribe button, because this is a good story.
Oh, I wasn't listening. I wasn't listening. I was busy texting our boy, Bruce CBC.
Well, there you go. Ezzie decided that the best way to eat healthy was to go to 7-Eleven. I mean, that wouldn't be the decision I would make. I'd maybe go to like a Vita Health or something like that, or, you know, just
Vita Health, Drew, someone's doing well,
or a general grocery store. But Ezzie being Ezzie, hey, all the power to you, my buddy. So Ezzie decided he'd go to 7-Eleven and buy some healthy food. Ezzie, what did you purchase at the 7-Eleven?
I purchased an apple.
An apple, okay,
or
good.
A couple of apples. I'm not sure. I mean, this is we're talking.
Was it eight or nine years ago? Was it a bushel of apples?
It wasn't a bushel.
Okay.
It was a couple of apples.
Yeah.
And a box of Kraft dinner.
Right. Everybody knows Kraft dinner, very healthy.
I think also maybe some skim milk. I'm not really sure. But long story short, what ended up happening was it was a rotten apple.
Uh-huh.
I took one bite of that apple and it basically, the only way I can describe it, it was like biting into poison. There were maggots in the apple. Oh, we had a whole segment on it back in the day on Illegal Curve. I ended up getting a $50 gift certificate out of it, which was nice.
I have a question.
I ate pretty nicely for a couple of weeks, for sure.
Did you consume the entire apple? Like, after you took that first bite and it was gross?
No, Dave, it was like, first off, I was by myself at the time. Again, single, lonely. This was before Naomi came in the picture. I took a bite and I'm like, what the hell is this? And we've all eaten food that's gone bad, right? Like, it was this, like, you know, it's 7-Eleven we're talking about here. The moral of the story is, don't ever buy, like, the other day, like, so I'm really close to a 7-Eleven here, here in River Heights. I don't want to give away my address, but he lives really
in the dumpster behind one, is basically where Oscar
I'm very close to the 7-Eleven here. And my son Ruben eats a lot of bananas, and we were out of bananas, and I was even considering, you know, going to 7-Eleven for a couple of bananas. But then I said to myself, remember what happened 8 years ago when I got that apple from 7-Eleven, just because the I love 7-Eleven. Like, hopefully, you know, this doesn't result in a lawsuit here, but just stick to the taquitos, stick to the cookies, stick to the hot dogs.
As he forgets,
stay away from the fruit.
As he forgets that he signed a non-disclosure statement after that $50 gift card.
He signed an NDA.
But to answer Coffee and TV's comment. Question, I would say the best hot thing at 7-Eleven is probably taquitos, which I had earlier today, by the way.
No, you didn't.
After the show, I went and had some taquitos.
He's a big dumb animal, folks.
On that note,
buffalo chicken, really nice.
On that note, what are you talking about? We just got started. We got trade talk. Come on, Drew. Show's rolling.
Yeah, there could be a breaking trade here, Drew.
Yeah,
there is. I'll tell you what. If there's a breaking trade, we'll log back in. But for now, let's see you again, everybody. We'll be back on Monday night, maybe Monday during the day, depending on what happens. But that'll be
Sunday during the day.
So what should they be doing?
They should be following us on LegalCurve.com. They should be following on social media.
Yeah.
Right, Drew?
At LegalCurve. That's our Twitter feed. Stay tuned there.
Like Instagram.
Instagram. YouTube. LegalCurve.com. That's the website. Whenever the Jets news breaks, be it tomorrow, be it in an hour from now, you know, we'll be there for you. That's our commitment to you each and every time. And of course, Monday night after the Jets and the Senators game and after the trade deadline, right around 8:40, in and around there, we're going to be back, of course, with the Illegal Curve post-game show, as we do after each and every Winnipeg Jets contest.
Stay away from the 7-Eleven fruit.
So another big game, double game day. Both the Jets and the Moose are victorious. So folks in Manitoba are oh, what's the website address for Chris Koff? It's illegalcurve.com.
There you go. Exactly right. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg.
Before we go, I just want to show, you know, some people might think I'm being irresponsible by having a beer during the post-game show. I also have my baby monitor here. So both of my kids are sleeping. So I've got a beer in one hand, and then I've got my baby monitor in the other hand. So both kids are sleeping. Just in case anyone was, you know, wondering if I was being irresponsible.
And actually, what you don't see on that monitor is that the babies have a monitor that's monitoring Ezzy, monitoring them. That's how it works. It's just it's a cycle that constantly repeats itself to make sure they're all taking care of each other. And can I wrap now?
Now you can wrap.
Thank you to everybody who's joined us all day long today, really more or less since we started back at 9 a.m. this morning. We encourage you, if you want to keep your Jets talk going, I don't think they'll have any stories as funny as Ezzy and the Rotten Apple, but Kenny and Rennie, Ken Weeb and Sean Reynolds, they've started their post-game show. That's available on their YouTube channel. We'll be back Monday. We'll be back maybe tomorrow, depending on what happens with the Jets, or Monday after the Jets and the Senators. But until then, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk, I'm your host,
Drew Mandel,
and Ezzy's kids and his beer, we wish you good night and good luck.